Hello and welcome to the Leadership in Insurance podcast. This is the podcast where we discuss what leadership looks like in the modern insurance business. We talk to insurtech leaders and founders, innovators and change agents from the insurance industry. We also talk to thought leaders from outside the industry, such as organizational psychologists, performance coaches, and investment professionals. Anyone who can add value to the conversation on how to lead insurance businesses of the future. Good morning and welcome to the Leadership in Insurance podcast. I'm your host, Alex Bond, and I'm very lucky to be joined by Dr. Avi Baruch of Previsico. Previsico is a name that I've already murdered about five times in our conversation this morning, but Avi, did I get it right that time?
You got it right, thank you.
Well, that's a good start. So, Avi, if you wouldn't mind, can you introduce the business and we can sort of get into the kind of depths of where it's relevant and pertinent to insurance?
Yeah, great, thanks. Previsico is a flood forecasting company that spun out of Loughborough University a couple of years ago. So at Loughborough, we've been working on a new technology for being able to forecast flooding, in particular surface water and small water course flooding. And we've been working on it for the last 20 years in partnership with the Environment Agency and the Cabinet Office. And following kind of the development of very kind of smart new technology, we decided to form a company to target the insurance sector and kind of the wider business community.
Yeah, great. With the How early, I mean, it's obviously it's been a 20-year project. So how, I mean, it has an obvious impact to kind of the insurance market for someone working in insurance. But from like the academic point of view, how early was it kind of into the process that people started saying, well, there's a business hat here and there's a business need? And then how long into that did it sort of jump into the insurance world, its application?
Yeah, well, it's kind of been obviously over 20 years, it's been kind of bubbling along. So it started off with my former PhD supervisor, Professor Yu. He developed his own hydrodynamic modeling software a long time ago, you know, 20 years ago, and has been testing it very slowly in a number of different environments. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of been widely used by different academics in different environments. So kind of over the course of those 20 years, we've been able to test it for, you know, coastal, river, surface water flooding in, you know, from Shanghai to New York. And so I guess over those 20 years of building confidence in it. And I think the moment that I guess the first big step was in 2015-16, when the Cabinet Office approached Loughborough University to kind of identify new technology that could fix the problem with flood warnings in the UK, which is that they're only really available for large river systems in the sea, even though the majority of floods are actually surface water. So we needed to develop a new solution, and that's kind of where they approached us to actually develop something that was not just a new scientific approach, but was actually something that could be operationally used by the UK government.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that was, I guess, the first real step towards getting something that was a bit more operational.
Yeah,
and then after I finished my PhD, I did some research on the project, and I think both me and my former PhD supervisor, Professor, kind of sat down and was like, I think this has got commercial legs in it too. It's not just an operational tool for government. It can help insurers. It can help humanitarian organisations and businesses. Mm-hmm. So we were lucky mm-hmm. enough to get Innovate UK funding to do a kind of a market discovery, and what that involved was basically very good program funded by the UK taxpayer of 20 grand to do a global market exploration. So I had a pretty much an unlimited travel budget to travel anywhere in the world to visit people affected by flooding.
Wow.
And find out what their problems were to help help them fix their problems. And that helped us come from the groundwork of what we realized was definitely a very viable business.
Mm. How does it work from this is completely sort of out my realm of kind of experience, how does it work kind of evolving a business out of a sort of academic exercise? Does the university still hold a stake, or does it just
so the university definitely take a stake to get started, and obviously give the founders stake to it. I think every university has a different approach. Yeah. Some are kind of more generous than others. But again, we worked really well with Loughborough University, so they were pretty fair and gave us enough to incentivize us and kind of continued giving us kind of opportunities further down the road. So it's every university approaches it differently, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's such an obviously like positive way of approaching you know sort of development and discovery of kind of new ideas, because you're coming at it from an academic standpoint, so you're sort of you're route agnostic in terms of kind of the commercials, and then so you can kind of, because one of the problems is sort of doing R&D inside a company, you've always got the company objectives are always overhanging you, whether that be budgetary or kind of the direction, whereas kind of coming at it something from an academic standpoint, you know, I know we talked previously and we'll get onto it, but you sort of, I don't want to say stumble because it makes it sound like this is like no planning at all, but what I mean is that you sort of, you create the tool and then it's like, right, what are the applications for this, rather than, right, we need, you know, we're trying to solve a specific solution internally. So there's huge positives from that kind of point of view.
Yeah, I think it really goes down to also, I think part of the challenge right now is that a lot of universities have such good research going on, especially on climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And the research and the kind of the data that's being produced is incredibly useful for the insurance industry.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the challenge is the universities over quite a long period of time have struggled to properly commercialize it and to actually get it used in the real world as much as it could be. And I think that this is where slowly there's a mindset change where more universities are forming spin-outs, because it just makes entire sense that, again, the universities aren't, they can commercialize it to an extent, but actually allowing a spin-out to just flourish and make its own path, bring its own kind of team members involved to transform kind of the research into something commercially operational is, I think, what's starting to happen more and more now, which is really good to see.
Mm. Because is it more common in my understanding is it's quite common in the US to do that. It's much more kind of common, much more commercially minded, but less so in the UK.
Yeah, I think the UK has a lot of catching up to do, and I think especially between the universities, some universities have had really good track record, other universities I think have had a really really poor track record. So I think obviously Loughborough had a bit of a quiet patch, but the last few years have been having like quite a few new spin-outs every year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's one of those things where a lot of it goes down to actually how the universities manage, whether a lot of them are afraid of spin-outs because they don't know where to go. Because once you let a company spin out again, they can take life. But I think slowly that kind of the concerns are really being debunked, because I don't, you just need to kind of trust the founders and help them actually make something out of it, really, as opposed to try and control the process and just let it die if you do too much.
Mm. Yeah, so my point of view would be, the university should be like the seed, it's almost like the seed round, and then they should, let it run, because presumably once you make that decision to say, right, we're going to spin this out and make this a business, the type of individuals that you need to have involved in the business, they change, because you need, commercially minded people that are not necessarily academics. What was your experience of that? Because obviously the business has grown now. Where did you kind of feel that you needed to bring people in? Where have been the key areas of kind of bringing in talent to the business?
So I think the first person we brought in was a CEO. Jonathan Jackson, he's kind of formed and, kind of three very successful startups, some of which have made quite impressive exits.
Mm-hmm.
He was essentially kind of advising us, and we got along very well. And I think we realized, what we needed, we had some, good academic backgrounds, but what we needed was more support on kind of how to build a business.
Yeah.
I think that was a really smart move for us, because I think other spin outs that haven't hired a good CEO have really struggled, because mm-hmm. you need to be able to raise investment to be able to kind of grow the business in the way that kind of you need to come. The real challenges in the early stages, you need that experience.
Yeah, sure.
And then also kind of from us working on kind of cloud was, you know, bringing in resources and expertise for that was also, again, the next step, which, again, at the university we hadn't really been doing. But again, when you're operational company in the insurance sector, you really need that experience. So it's trying all that kind of really exciting code that was written in the academic setting and making ready for the commercial world.
Yeah. What's the main difference for that? Is it security perspective or just, you know, the robustness of that sort of code?
A lot is robustness, I think. Yeah. So I think to be able to scale up, we needed to change a lot.
Does the university help from the kind of
approaches?
Presumably you can have a little bit of a pick of the bunch for any sort of bright young bright sort of grads that you that must make things easy from that point of view.
I'm not just saying this, but again, we've been very impressed. So we've had Loughborough interns with us right from the start. So fortunately, Santander funded internships at Loughborough and quite a few other universities, so we've been taking them in. And last summer, we had two really bright ones that we decided we actually wanted to keep. Just happened that, you know, there was a pandemic and they didn't really want to go back to uni.
Yeah. During
the pandemic. So we actually kept two of them on for a year in industry. They're still with us now. It's worked out very well for us.
But I mean, one of the things that we, you know, I'm constantly talking about, because, you know, talent is obviously the thing that I focus on in the recruitment game, in that we're not very good at, particularly in the insurance industry, in telling our story into things like the into the sort of graduate market. And, you know, that's why there's lots of people that, you know, you meet people in insurance and how do they get into it? Because a family member used to working there. And I know your business is not exclusively in the insurance market, but what I'm sort of getting at is that because you're so directly related to the university, there's this kind of open line of kind of communication, so therefore you can tell the story of what the business is doing, and therefore it's much more attractive, you know, because the transparency is the thing I talk about. You know, people are attracted to, yes, good ideas and good stories, but it's really about the kind of finding out and really understanding it. I think a lot of businesses and industries, and insurance is one of those, doesn't attract talent because they can't tell their story very well or very transparently, because it's this big homogenous lump that says insurance on it, and people go, I've heard that's a bit boring, especially if they're graduates. Whereas, you know, you've got that direct line so people can see what you're doing, and I think that kind of transparency is important, but also it's attractive, I think.
Yeah, I also think what I have to say, I guess when I was a graduate, I didn't realize how much science was actually needed to do, you know, to do insurance properly.
Yeah.
So again, now that I'm kind of working kind of with, you know, CAT modelers and risk engineers, you realize how smart you need to be to do this well, and how scientific approaches that you can do to an extent in this academic background, actually how exciting it is, where you've actually got a lot of people in the industry using that more and more. Come in a different way. I think there's definitely a bit of education, especially around geography, which I've always got a soft spot for, is actually helping geography actually get into that space, because it is such an exciting area.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think it's something that the business acknowledges, the industry acknowledges that they don't do very well, but particularly, yeah, how wide reaching it is. And, you know, geography is a great example. You know, I wouldn't have known before I entered the industry that you know, geography has such a direct application. But I always make, when I started in insurance, even actually I was in insurance and then I left insurance to go and work in recruitment into the insurance space. It was only actually when I went to the recruitment side I'd even heard of what an actuary did, for example. So, you know, if I did maths at university, I wouldn't even necessarily know that that was an option. So I just think there's a big job to be done in sort of promoting how wide reaching the roles can be. And, you know, there's engineering roles within it. And but geography is such an obvious miss, because it's so important to what the business does, that I just don't think we do a good enough job of kind of spreading that information out there. So I was going to ask you about the Lloyd's Lab, because that's how originally we kind of got in touch. How did you get involved in the Lloyd's Lab?
We applied.
Some people have applied, you know, you see. So I didn't know. But did you apply?
We applied. It's actually one of the first things when I formed the company I did was I applied. Right. And we got a response back saying, really exciting technology. I think you need to grow a little bit before you get back to us. So I took that on board. Yeah. That was the first cohort. So it was literally, you know, a few weeks after we launched the company.
Yeah.
But then kind of, you know, 2 years passed and we've grown a lot, now almost 20 people, and had a really good kind of product, but we had some early use cases, some cases with government, some with insurance, and we really wanted to kind of better understand how we fit into the Lloyd's market. So I felt the timing was perfect, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it just also happened to be that we were cohort 4, which was kind of the first virtual one. So that was, as the pandemic was unfolding, we realized it was all going to be virtual. Which I feel like was a very good time to almost actually reflect on our proposition and how we can make that work better for the insurance, or for the Lloyd's market, while I guess the rest, everyone else was just trying to figure out what the hell was going on. We at least were being actually quite proactive and kind of co-developing something, which was actually very effective in the end.
Mm. What was your biggest learn from that experience? What's the biggest takeaway that you've applied to the business, perhaps?
So I think it's probably not surprising. Obviously, I think the headline, what we realized very early on was, you know, we came in open-minded, obviously wanting to win new business, but also, you know, generate, and what, you know, very clearly on, I'm sure it's not a surprise, use cases was, you know, one of those things where we just need to, the more, you can't ever have enough use cases to be able to especially convince some of the Lloyd's market to actually adopt a new technology. So what we did was create use cases and do some kind of historic assessments and validation. And what ended up being kind of our main thing that we produced was our Lloyd's Lab report, which is free to download on our website, where basically you can, where what we did was just look at estimating savings that could be produced from being proactive and mitigating flooding using advanced warning,
mm-hmm.
making reasonable estimates based on historical events with our Lloyd's mentors, and taking that forward. So we produced a report, and I think that was actually a very effective outcome, because it helped us very much commercially, kind of taking it to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I guess, having something really tangible to then be able to present to non-Lloyd's insurers too, actually.
Yeah, sure. So actually, I mean, that'd be quite interesting to learn. In practical terms, you know, what's the kind of service that you offer to the insurance industry? What's the kind of practical nature of the business?
So we are at our heart a flood warning company. So, you know, we developed a unique technology that is very effective at predicting the depth and time of flooding in the hours ahead of an event. So what we can do is provide actionable warnings. So for example, your property is expected to have a flood of up to 25 centimeters by 3 p.m. today. And cover in our hydrodynamic model. The thing we initially said is warnings to customers, so both commercial but also direct. But then there's also kind of further applications and claims. So I guess in the Lloyd's Lab, what we were doing was estimating the savings.
Sorry, Abby. I'm just going to
think of how I can better.
Yeah, we are go seamless.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah. Yeah, so you were saying about the offering is your advanced flood warning to customers.
Yeah, so again, as a HARP, we provide early warning and actionable warnings to help mitigate loss. So an example could be based on the latest rainfall forecasts, we've forecasted the depth of 35 centimeters at these properties and 25 centimeters at these properties. That will occur, you know, starting at 9 a.m. today. And then, so we're producing that, you know, across all the country. Now, the initial use case is, you know, emails to customers, both residential and also commercial. But then, you know, in addition to kind of the loss mitigation side, there's also helping in claims transformation and also kind of resource allocation and estimating kind of losses. But generally kind of improving the customer journey. So you're getting in touch with them before the event occurs, you're keeping in touch with them during the event, and then post-event, again, you've got all the information you need for a very quick claim settlement. So it's just, I guess, getting ahead and being proactive even before the event occurs.
And that's much more down, it seems to be much more down the line of where we should be going with things, because it's you know, the old model of just indemnifying against loss is a great model, but it's, yeah, we've not been doing enough, certainly not on the kind of personal line side. I think on the commercial side, you know, you see some of the risk engineering services that people have offered, and they'll go into factories and advise on kind of, you know, fire risks or other such kind of ways of reducing risk. But particularly on the personal line side or smaller commercial lines, we haven't done enough, I don't think. And arguably it's because the tools haven't been there to do it on scale. But obviously this, yeah, if you get a warning ahead of time, and presumably you just, the principle is you raise everything up if you need to, if you're in one of those areas, and therefore you may get a claim, but that claim would be dramatically reduced from where it should be.
For example, one of the use cases we looked at in Lloyd's Lab was, you know, Hurricane Sandy in New York, where the art galleries were storing fine art in the basement.
Wow.
That needed to be moved to higher ground. I think that's probably the simplest use case, because it was just the fine art that was indemnified. So again, 100% of that loss could have been saved. But, you know, we've got other ones like, you know, car dealerships where, well, most of the losses would be the cars that are submerged. So you need to have a flood action plan. You need to know where to move them and kind of the systems in place and early warning to then take that action. Mm-hmm. Once you've done that, then what, you've just got the building left to protect. Mm-hmm. So, you know, each use case is different, but, you know, there's a lot of kind of calculations that can be made, and the maths makes sense. So it's a no-brainer, really.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting as well, because it looks at more value-added services you can offer. You know, presumably you can kind of help with more kind of repair, and, you know, you can be more proactive across the value chain, as you say. If you're getting in there early and therefore you're reducing your cost, you can kind of add more value rather than kind of saying, let's just reduce what we bring in because the claims reduce, therefore the, you know, you don't always have to pass it all back. You can create a better insurance product, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the feedback from the market on the Lloyd's side, you know, what was that like? Did you have much knowledge of kind of Lloyd's before you went in? Did you this?
I had some, but I learned a lot. Yeah, I think that's probably what everyone says. But yeah, I think you can always learn more about kind of the insurance market, but especially the Lloyd's market. I've been in a couple of accelerators now, and I think it was an accelerator like no other. It was really, really interesting that, again, because of the history, they were able not just to help us come commercial, but just like show, you know, us tutorials on like how the whole market works, and, you know, the history and kind of where they're heading, the blueprints, etc., and kind of try and provide us with data. So it was really, really engaging, really exciting. Really a massive shame that I couldn't be there face to face with everyone.
I know, and that is sad, because that is a big part of the experience. And you know, obviously I'm a service provider to Lloyd, so I didn't work in there every day, but I still loved it. Every time I had a meeting and it was in the Lloyd's building, and you just, you know, it's quite something. So it's a bit of a shame that you didn't get that experience, but I've no doubt you'll be welcome back in at some point in the future.
Yeah, I'll be showing up soon.
What surprised you most about the insurance industry that you've kind of learned from your kind of dealings with it?
Good question. I've really enjoyed the conversations we've had with kind of the people with the scientific backgrounds in mm-hmm. the insurance industry. There's so much expertise, and also the propositions teams, so like you can often have a lot of excitement, a lot of really free thinking, mm-hmm. And kind of a lot of co-creation at the right time. Again, it doesn't always happen, but I think there's some real gems all across the industry that we've really enjoyed kind of working with and talking to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's been I wasn't always expecting that, I think, right from the start. So that was, again, a very pleasant surprise. But probably from very early on, I never realized how complicated it was, because, again, I'm not from the insurance industry, from the academic background. Mm-hmm. So as I kind of started my market exploration, I was constantly like, I was like, what, how many layers are there here? I did not know that this is how it works, especially kind of, you know, everything about the Lloyd's market, you know, how the claims, how the kind of capital resourcing works and everything. I did not think that was that complicated before I got into it.
No, it's interesting. I think so you touched on the collaboration there, and you know, I think collaboration is something the insurance market does well. And obviously in Lloyd's, you've got the subscription market, so collaboration is kind of inherent in the model. But I think I'm still surprised to this day that how much collaboration there is. And I swear it must be one of the few industries where, you know, I've worked in lots of offices where they've worked, you know, they've been providing into maybe banking or alternative sectors. And there's still a sort of surprise when I can just pick up the phone to someone I may not know, and then they will help you and they will talk to you. And and I think when you lump it in with financial services, it you wouldn't necessarily think that. But I just would echo that, and I find it an incredibly helpful market. I think people are very willing to help and collaborate, and it probably doesn't outwardly look like it's going to be like that. So I think that's always quite surprising. I wanted to ask you about the non-insurance stuff as well, because insurance is a facet of what you do. But I know that you work with kind of NGOs as well. You know, it'd be good to hear about more of the other work that you do that isn't in the insurance industry and the kind of application.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, where we started off was with government. So the initial kind of grants we got to work with government were working with the police, the fire and rescue, and emergency services. Mm-hmm. So again, providing them with a warning to help coordinate the event response. So position vehicles in the right places, kind of be proactive and supporting communities affected by flooding.
Yeah.
That work's still carrying on. We also obviously realized that, you know, providing these warnings to businesses and, you know, housing associations, for example, helps them also be more proactive. So it's not just about the insurance industry, it's also about everyone who's affected by flooding, which is, again, the whole world, really.
Yeah.
So, you know, about, I think 17% of the globe is at risk of flooding. So what we've also then been doing is, when I was doing my market exploration, I was visiting a lot of countries that, you know, had a lot of severe flood problem coming in informal communities. So working in kind of Bangladesh and Kenya, and we were quite fortunate late last year there was a grant available to kind of work together with Kenyan organizations. So we partnered up with the Kenyan Red Cross that we've been having a very good relationship with,
mm-hmm.
and the Kenyan Meteorological Department, and we formed a kind of project to start providing our forecasts across the city of Kisumu, which is kind of the one of the west coast western cities of Kenya, kind of by Lake Victoria, and providing our service live there. So that's been happening for the last few months, and it's been a really effective project. Quite a good success story for us, actually. So we kind of really wanted right from the start that, you know, while we kind of describe ourselves as an insurtech, we are really focused on the insurance market. But I think there would be we're really keen to make sure that kind of our principle is that, well, these warnings can help anyone, and we should be helping those that we can. So I think we're just keeping that going, because I think it's really important to everyone at the team to make that work.
How do you balance that? Because presumably, you know, there's kind of a balance of resources, and one would imagine the things down the insurance line, for example, provide the commercials, but you know, you're not necessarily doing it for commercial reasons when you're working with you know, certain other parts.
Grant funding helps. So
yeah,
that project was funded by Catapult, which is kind of the UK innovation grant program. So that helped. That, you know, allowed us to fund the work and to get it all going. Once you've got it going, again, it's very low running costs, which we're happy to provide as long as we're kind of a commercially viable organization.
Yeah. Well, you've got these grant fundings, and there was some funding from Loughborough. Did you get any external investment into the business, the business side of your...
So we raised an angel round in our first year, and then last year we raised... got an investment loan from Innovate UK. So had a variety of sources to date.
So what's the future? You know, last year was a difficult year for everyone, a lot of remote working, and things seem to be getting back on track for most things. Is there development of new sort of products and services? Are there more kind of collaborative pieces? Because I meant to ask you, sorry, I'm jumping back a bit, but as you were talking about the flooding, and I know I asked you this before, but because you're sort of challenging the kind of traditional claims model, you know, more proactivity, have people talked to you about using it in a parametric solution?
There's a lot of interest around that side. I think right now we're not doing anything on the parametric for a range of reasons, because I think it's one that we should always be thinking about, because it can really help. My challenge with it is we are constantly improving our forecasts. So after every single event, we investigate our performance. We see what changes we can make, and we make those changes instantly.
Yeah.
Our trigger changes. So again, for parametric, it's slightly less suitable right now, but that could change in future. So I think it's one where I think our claims proposition is less about parametric, but more about fast tracking and making a really speedy claim. So for example, if you have provided the customer advanced warning, the customer then communicated back saying, this is what they've done, this is what, you know, they've managed to move their car and their TV, but there's some very small scale damage, probably likely to be in the, you know, 2000 mark. I guess at that point, the insurer has a lot of information to be able to rapidly process a claim.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, actually, we've got a role to play in the claims process, certainly, whether it's parametric or actually just speeding it up and triaging is, you know, that's possibly where we're going to be more effective. Time will tell. I think very early days of parametric, I think, is going to go in a very interesting direction over time.
Yeah, well, it was the hot topic of last year, certainly for me. I mean, I was talking about it a lot, and obviously the guys at Flood Flash, and who I think you've mentioned, you know, the guys over there. And I was just thinking the conjunction of two kind of technologies, you know, if you can proactively try and reduce the claim by, you know, good warning, and then obviously you've got this trigger, you could reduce that trigger amount, or, you know, there's it's what's great is I think your business just gives opportunities for insurance businesses to be quite creative and proactive about how they produce insurance products and where it sits.
Again, Flutter Flash is fantastic. It just gives them an option. Like, if you think you're good at managing your own risk, take our product, and you'll get payout. You don't need to have the whole claims process. I think it's complementary to also what we're doing, which is, if you think you're good at managing your own risk, well, here's a wanting to help you implement that. Hopefully that, you know, that can again make help you in deciding what's the best insurance product for you.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it's interesting to see a lot of these things are putting control back into the hand of the consumer. You know, they are exactly as you say. They're saying, you know, how do you think you're good at managing your own risk? Then let's give you tools to kind of reward that, really, which is interesting. But I sabotaged my own question because I was asking you about the future and then I sort of threw you back into parametrics. So apologies for that. But so Abby, what's kind of future plans in terms of kind of growth? Because you focus more on the UK.
What we've been doing today was really making sure that our UK product works well and is very good. Now we're live across the whole of the UK, but last year, you know, we raised investment to target the US. So we've been kind of gradually setting up our US product, and you know, later this year we'll be going live across the whole of the US. So we're making very good progress there. We've also getting some early traction in Asian markets. So I think geographic expansion is the key. That's the main development, but it's also improvements to our products. I think there's a lot behind what can make a very good early warning. And the key is we're not 100% accurate. Every forecast is going to have uncertainty around it. So I think the key is what's going to make us successful now, but also moving forward, is being the leader in being providing a very good proactive warning. So we're just putting a lot of resources into kind of the data analytics side just getting all the information we need to make the product as accurate as possible.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, look, I mean, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on the podcast. It's a really interesting area of the market, and it's nice to talk to someone, you know, from outside who's kind of like bringing new ideas. Because I think, you know, touching on that collaboration aspect, what's very clear is kind of the future of insurance is up for grabs in terms of what it looks like. And I think that's what I like about, you know, we talked about Flood Flash, but what I like about kind of a lot of these and your business is complementary. You know, it's just saying that the insurance market can be served up as a product and a service in many different ways. And it's really exciting to see. So Abby, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you, it was a pleasure. Cheers.
Thanks a lot.
As always, this podcast is brought to you by FinPro Search Partners, often simply known as FinPro. FinPro is an executive recruitment business working in the insurance and insurtech space on an international basis. If you would like to find out more about FinPro, please visit our website, www.wearefinpro.com, or our FinPro company page on LinkedIn. I've been your host, Alex Bond, and I would personally love to connect with anyone who is interested in the changing world of insurance. So feel free to reach out to me directly, either on LinkedIn or via my email at alex@wearefinpro.com. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and I hope to see you back next week. Thank you.